Good afternoon, ladies, and good afternoon, gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of Cover Your Six. I'm the host, Ron Easton, and welcome. I'm so glad you're here. Just for a few bits of housekeeping, there is a webpage, coveryoursixpodcast.com. If you go there, you will see past episodes that we have done with Dr. Harper and Harry Dunn, Aquilino Gonell, and just some wonderful conversations that we have had. This week, though, I'm tickled because we're having Zavi Thorne, that is a transgender veteran who is actually airborne. I mean, he went airborne all the way, and there's a reason why, who is going to be my guest. And we talk about the transition and her dealings with the VA. I also have the TikTok star of the day, I call him, U.S. Army Overlord. Some know him as Rig. This gentleman, when we were in D.C. for the Remove the Regime rally, graciously donated some of his time so that I might represent the Vietnam veterans who could not be there. And I definitely appreciate it. But here's something I want you to remember going into Christmas. We're almost there, okay? People are buying presents and you're getting things on the tree and talking about the meals that you're going to have and the family that's coming over. But I want you to consider this, that in 2025, there were a total of 1,184 children that were killed as a result of mass shooting. Now, they clarify a mass shooting as any shooting that takes place with four or more victims. Not only were there 1,100, but there were 3,000 that were injured. And these are kids that are going to have to live with the scars for the rest of their lives. Why? Because chicken shit politicians won't do the right thing. They won't take on the NRA and ban bump stocks and ban high capacity magazines because they would rather deal with the money that's coming in their pocket. So how many of your children have to become fodder for this lunacy? I want you to remember the fact also that in the year 2025, since King Cankles has taken over, hate crime has taken a giant rise. All right? You have ICE that have come in to Minneapolis, New Orleans, other cities. You know them, Charlotte. And they are violating American citizens' rights. You had Kristi Noem stand before a committee and lie and say that there had been no American citizens that have been deported, especially no American veterans. But that's a lie. They deported a four-year-old child who was undergoing cancer treatment, life-saving cancer treatment. You have to be a special kind of bitch to do something like that. I want you to think about the fact that we are now a country that we lost Denmark as one of our allies. Why? Because to Denmark, under this administration, we have become a security threat. That means this administration cannot be trusted with this nation's secrets anymore. You have people like Benjamin Netanyahu, I call him, who stands up because of the massacre that took place in Australia. He wants to criticize the Prime Minister of Australia when really you need to just shut the hell up for the atrocities that you committed in Gaza. They call it genocide. And then there's always on the popularity list, the Epstein file. They released 95,000 pictures. Some of them they could show, and some of them, as they were described, were horrendous. These are wealthy, wealthy individuals who took liberties with preteen children. Little babies. 12, 13 years old, trafficked them. What if that was your child? Think about that. For those of you who still support this madness, you can't explain any good reasons why this country has to be guilty of war crimes, why this country has to have an increase in racism, why this country has to sacrifice our children because of the lunacy that is taking place. I want you to think about all of that as you enter into your Merry Christmas. Because for some, it won't be so merry. We'll be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, as I mentioned earlier, one of my guests today is an individual who served the United States as United States Army, airborne, if I'm not mistaken. And there's a little bit of a twist. So I'm going to let you find out and introduce my guest, Zavi Thorne. Zavi, how are you?
I'm doing great, Ron. How are you?
I'm just absolutely fantastic. Freezing my ass off, but I'm all right. What drew me to you, obviously, with you being transgender, mm-hmm. and you were making videos of you going into your local American Legion and the flack that you received. But before we get into that, let's talk about your military career and how we ended up here.
Okay. Well, I really don't even know where to start. Military career, that'd be good. I joined, I had kind of a turbulent upbringing a little bit, but I was kind of really no direction or the direction will kind of come on a little bit when I tell you more about myself. But I joined in March of 1989. I actually scored pretty high on the ASVAB, so I had basically my pick of a lot of things I could have done. I now wish I would have gotten medic, but hey, I went ahead and went Signal Corps. So I initially started off as a 31 Victor, which is when our equipment changed, our MOS, the last, the Alpha designator, was changing. Mm-hmm. I went through about three of them. And I also went, so I trained at, I did my boot camp at Fort Sill, Oklahoma, did my AIT there as well. Then I went on to jump school at Fort Benning, Georgia. And that's usually with the 1st of the 507th Parachute Infantry Regiment. I was Delta Company. And from there, I went on to my permanent party at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. So I was assigned 18th Airborne Corps, which is basically the command or parent corps of all of Fort Bragg. So under us, we have 82nd Airborne, 101st, I believe 1st, 3rd, and 3rd, maybe 5th Special Forces groups. Delta Force is there. We just have a whole plethora of kick-ass. It's wild.
There you go. Airborne all the way, as they
airborne.
Say.
Airborne. Most fun you can have with your pants on.
So how long was your military career?
That's a good question. My initial active duty stint was around 5 years. Then I got out and I was already go back. I was deployed during Operation Desert Shield and Desert Storm, and later on to Stay for Provide Comfort. So it was three. So I was deployed then. I almost went to Panama. I was actually about 3 weeks delay. Had I graduated 3 to 4 weeks earlier from jump school, I would have been woken up in the middle of the night and I would have been, they would have popped that can over Panama and I would have been dropping in. I had actually had a few friends that dropped in. So my initial aspirations growing up, I wanted to actually do Special Forces, and I was kind of on a track. I wanted to actually do Signal Squadron Delta Force, which was, it's a long and lofty goal there, and I made it as far as HHC, 19th SF Group. So that was later after my first, so I was active reserve for about 3 years, and so that's kind of my total within active ready reserve. There was it was about 8 to 12 years, depending on what you want to call the inactive ready reserve part. But
got you. When you started the transition, were you still active duty?
No, I wasn't. Physical transition. There's a I have always been who I've always been. Okay. So, it's a transition to transition over, but it is really who you are, because we're talking about in utero changes. Okay, this is something you're born with.
Gotcha.
And so, my transition actually started about in with the VA. I'm also, just giving my background now, fast forward to now, I'm a longtime community volunteer, starting with, I was originally diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder from a traumatic event during Desert Storm. So I'd basically been in counseling with the VA. I'd gotten my disability. And later on, a few of us that have proven kind of to be a little further along in our care and stuff, were actually invited on to train as peer counselors or peer support specialists. So I went through that training. Yeah, I went to that training about 12 years ago, and I'm currently a peer support specialist with the Washington State Department of Veterans Affairs. I also am a 3-year volunteer with our local senior center, and I currently work with a homeless outreach ministry called The Well in Mount Vernon, Washington.
So you've pretty much been of service your entire life.
Yes. I think I kind of got the bug for that. So in response to the initial question, I guess through my counseling, we had a little thing. There was some things that were still there, and it came out probably about 4 years ago. We started exploring gender, and I had pretty much decided, me and a couple of counselors had, you know, I was already getting there. I already knew it as far back as when I was 4 years old, but you got to kind of get through. I was raised in a highly conservative culture, so Utah.
I think they call that tight ass conservative. So
that's tight ass conservative. Yep. Yeah,
absolutely.
And so these things weren't discussed. In fact, in a lot of highly conservative cultures, if you have anything in the rainbow spectrum that is a part of you, that gets hammered down very, very quickly. And hence probably why I ended up joining the military, because, you know, after all that bullying, after all the being different and stuff, I thought the military, okay, if everyone's been telling me to man up here, so let's get ready to man the fuck up. And so I manned up all the way to Airborne Special Forces. And that's another story. Surprisingly, a lot of us do that. So,
I have heard this before, and I can't remember the individual's name, but blonde hair, and he was like a SEAL before, mm-hmm. and she now.
Yeah.
But she made an impact, like, and I'm sorry, I can't remember her name, but here's the one question that I want mm-hmm. to ask you. What are your feelings as far as Pete Kegsbreath's slant toward transgender soldiers and veterans?
Well, I still want to know his slant, because he sounds so hyper-masculated, I sometimes wonder if he isn't a she. I know this is going to,
Hey, well, you're not the only one, Zavi. Okay.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You're not alone in that camp.
In fact, a lot of us, there's so much rainbow in the military, and has been for centuries. I mean, it's we've always been there. We always will be. My opinion of, I think it really goes to Trump, because a lot of us woke up on January 21st and saw a United States president pretty much with his hand signing us out of existence. So since January 21st, on paper, I'm no longer a human being or an American citizen or anything really. And it's kind of showing in the VA now. Like one thing is my medications. I'm under gender care now, and I've got a great team of doctors, but they've actually been scaled back a lot to the point to where they have to now, like one of my hormones, they have to say that it's for menopause, you know, because they have to off-label a lot of our stuff just to keep us hidden away from.
Let me. You're telling me that you, as a veteran that has served this country, they have to sneak in order for you to get the medications that you
now
deserve?
Now they do. When I started back in probably two, three years ago, it was a great day. In fact, my birthday's coming up on the 27th, and it was my new birthday. Here's my blue topaz, which is my new birthday birthstone.
Gorgeous.
On December 27th, I received the phone call that I had been approved for transition, and I had an appointment with my transition team a few weeks after that. And I met with, I've got three MDs, two psychologists, one psychiatrist, which is an MD, and two social workers. It's a pretty big educated thing there. It's not a decision that doctors take lightly. It's definitely not a decision I take lightly. Let's just put it this way. I've been out the door at 120 knots with a MC-1 parachute, 50 pounds worth of weapons and gears and landing in a crosswind at the dead of night.
Uh-huh.
And this is, you know, to see the contrast, it's, but the statistics will absolutely blow your mind about what currently in the 2015 transgender survey, which is the largest, you can look up United States transgender survey. They did a 2015 and they got a 2022. The results are still slowly coming in still on. Approximately 23% of all transgender people in the United States surveyed, approximately 23% have served in the United States Army. Or not Army, but military, sorry.
In the military.
In the military. 23% of transgender adults in this country have served in the United States military. Now, of those... this is really curious. My endocrinologist actually asked when I first got with him. Endocrinology is basically the medical discipline that deals with hormones and stuff right. like that. And he asked me what I did, and I told him what I did. And he said that didn't surprise him because he said he has been doing gender care at the Veterans Administration now for over 20 years. And he said over half of the trans women that come to him for help, and that's in the Puget Sound VA healthcare system. Over half of the trans women that come to him for help have come from high-octane military backgrounds. You know, we're talking airborne, special forces, Navy SEALs, Marine Force Recon, Air Force Pararescue. So, you know, I think it's mostly because, you know, we were told to man up as kids. So a lot of us manned the fuck up and we went.
Yeah, you manned all the way. And just so people understand,
yeah,
these units that Zavi is speaking about, these are the cream of the crop. These are the people you call when you need a job done that they don't need to know about. These are the people that you call. So you've heard about SEAL Team 6,
yep.
Delta Force, Marine Recon. These are general badasses from Jump
Street. Exactly.
Okay, they were born that way.
And the And so if it's over half of the veterans that are, you know, come from these backgrounds, you know, I mean, you do the math, we're looking at probably, oh my gosh, you know, over half of trans women, 23% of trans people are veterans. You know, you're looking at, I don't know what, 6 to 8% are of trans women in this country are former mm-hmm. operators. Mm-hmm. That's insane.
That is kind of an insane.
So follow a few of us in the bathroom and yeah. fuck around and find out, I guess. I don't know.
How is life for you now?
Compared to military, I thought that, going through the military and stuff, I thought that that was my ultimate man up and stuff, or my ultimate brave act. Believe me, this is incredibly braver. I'm going to quickly show you, and this is on podcast. So I'm going to quickly bring up what I call glow up. This is like my, we call it a glow up because a lot of us, when we post veteran pictures, this was my glow up. But I'm going to turn to the screen here, and there I am. That was I was 22 in the pick. I had just gotten back from Desert Storm, and there's me years later. I'm 55 in that pic. Okay. I'm 22 years old in that pic.
Wow. That is a glow up and kind of a grow up if you want to. Listen, we're coming to the end of our time, but first of all, thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much for consenting to do this. And
absolutely.
I applaud your bravery because you go to the American Legion and where, as you said, one bartender wouldn't even bother to serve you, but you didn't
That was a long story. We may have had a little miscommunication, but that's kind of corrected and kind of under the bridge. For the most part, a lot of veterans have treated me good there. Okay. There's a few that haven't. It's like, they have no idea what MAGA is, especially the people who have served in units that, were involved in D-Day, that have served in the same units and have that DNA going back to defeating Hitler. And then you see veterans actually, choosing to. And one more thing, if you want to know the history of transgender veterans, look up Albert Cashier. Okay, he was a Civil War Union soldier, a trans man. And his history is really fascinating. That we have been here. We've been here for decades.
Zavi Thorne, thank you so much. Appreciate you.
It was good. Thank you for having me, man.
Ladies and gentlemen, as I mentioned in my opening, one of my guests is an individual. Oh, me say a lot. An individual that I respect highly. Not only is he a fellow veteran, but this man is one of the most outspoken forces that I've met in a long time. Those of you who are on TikTok know him as U.S. Army Overlord. What up, Rig?
What's going on with you?
Man, I'm just kind of hanging here trying to make it do what it do, baby. You know, in the cold, I might add, because it's like 30 below zero here, wind chill.
Way too much. Last time I seen stuff like that was Bosnia, and I swore I would never let myself get that cold again. So it's about, I think with the wind chill, like maybe 7 or 8 here, and I'm inside warm, not Amen. Going out there either.
Amen. Stay that way. Let's get into your military career, because it's quite extensive. You spent over 22 years in the Army.
Yes. 22 years, 11 months, 4 days. Not that I'm counting, but.
Okay, no.
That was on my final DZ-14. I had the big Kool-Aid smile holding in my hand. And it was the happiest moment of my military career holding that DZ-14. It was a long road to get there. But yeah, I did about 5 deployments.
Let's talk about those.
So my very first deployment was Operation Sea Signal, basically a humanitarian mission. in Cuba, 95. The locals, like the Coast Guard, was being overwhelmed by the number of Cuban migrants jumping in the water, fleeing Cuba, and that type of rule. And so that was like my very first deployment. I did that back in 1995. Then I was stationed overseas with 1st Infantry Division. I did two deployments there. So I caught Operation Joint Endeavor. That was the Bosnia rotation. Brutal temperatures. It got down to about negative 55 with the wind chill. It was minefields everywhere. Absolutely my worst deployment. I was sliced away from my main unit, had a racist platoon sergeant. Just a very dark time. And it really seemed like the area we was at, no one knew we was going to be there. So it seemed like somebody just kind of like wanted to get something under their belt, get a deployment under their belt. And we was there like on our own. And so it really sucked. Had to buy my own cold weather gear, everything. It really, really was a dark deployment. But that made me a lot stronger. A lot of people got out. I knew got out after that, but I stuck with it. And so I went back and did Operation Joint Guard in Kosovo in 1989. Came back from Germany to El Paso, Texas, where I became a military instructor. Pumped a lot of people out towards a war effort after 9/11. And then I joined them in 2008 with my deployment to Iraq and Operation Iraqi Freedom. When I got back from there, I did my final deployment to Afghanistan under Operation Enduring Freedom in 2013. But a great thing, I got to go see Barack Obama in 2014 because they asked for volunteers because he was giving out the Medal of Honor. And some white soldiers did not want to go. They expressed concerns that he was an American citizen. He was a Muslim and didn't want to go. So I immediately raised my hand and said, I'll go. And bought that uniform, that top they see me wearing right now. I bought that in the Pentagon. Had that bad boy tailored, put it right there on the spot. Dropped me some serious cash on that damn thing. Bought it and went there and was standing right there. I mean, he was like feet from me when he passed me. And I didn't say a word. I let him be because he wasn't there for me. He was there to honor that soldier who had went through so much hell to get the Medal of Honor. But it was great. It was the best Monday ever. I think it was like July 25th, 2014. And I retired in 2016. I beat Obama out of office.
Roger that. You mentioned something that I specifically want to touch on with you because you talked about racism in the military. Now, for my tour of duty in Vietnam, not only was I looked upon as dirt at home, but then I go to Vietnam thinking, you know, we're all green here, we're all military. And there was severe racism even in Vietnam. And it's like, how do you feel as a black man who has to fight basically on two fronts?
Isn't that our story though, right? Every soldier, every black soldier, you look at even the soldiers who got the Medal of Honor, right? If you look even at World War I and World War II, no black soldier ever got the Medal of Honor during those wars because of Jim Crow, because of the racism. Only because, you know, Bill Clinton had a special commission done. He went back and gave seven soldiers the Medal of Honor for World War II. And Barack Obama gave that Harlem Hellfighter his Medal of Honor for World War I. But of course, America's a racist country. You know, I joined because of the L.A. riots and I didn't want to get, you know, shot in the streets and in the ghetto. So I figured I'd be, you know, I could probably do a better job as a soldier. I was definitely not going to be a cop because of the racism. But yeah, even my first, even the basic training in Fort Leonard Wood, when we completed all of our training, you know, I was like, hey, we soldiers now, man, we about to go to AIT. People about to go out in town and go have a good time. And my drill sergeant just walked over to me and was like, hey, I'm sorry, but you can't leave the base because it's not safe for you. Right? Not the white soldiers, me. It's not safe for me. And so I know this country. I know what it is. The same people who talk that duty, honor, country nonsense, but they wouldn't rent to me in Indiana. And I already had four deployments at a time under my belt. You know, people use the hard ER in our presence and slip up and be like, you know, because I think we was driving with somebody, it was being my partner, and he seen a mixed couple, man. He was like, you know, GDN lovers.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I was just like, Yeah, there you go. Mm-hmm. Right. So mm-hmm. we knew. They cried when Obama got reelected in Indiana.
Of course they did.
So
I just started reading a book. Matthew Delmont, I think his last name is, called Half American. And this was about the story of Black Americans who served in World War II and the hell that they had to go through in order to prove and serve and be a patriot. It has left me somewhat dumbfounded, but then coming from the South, I understand. But to admit to this day that this is still going on in this United States Army, it kind of puts that Pledge Allegiance thing to, I ain't saying that shit.
Yeah, it's a shame, right? Think about it. If so, my son was an excellent candidate to go join the Air Force Academy. Brilliant. Military mind, had my full endorsement. But after that demon got back in office, I was like, there's no way, man. There's no way. Because no, under the best circumstances, the military is tough. But with a demon like that in charge, I already knew. It's like, there's no way I will let my son go through that because I know me. And I know if somebody come at my son or hurt my son, I'm not going to be responsible for what happens next. So to keep both of us free and above ground, I was like, you know what? Hey, let's hold off on that.
Amen.
Go get your engineering degree. Let's see what this country looks like in the next 4 years. And if you still want to pursue that. But he knew. He thanked me, too. He thanked me every day he dodged a bullet because his friend went in and they already put him out. Mental stuff, saying he has mental issues because this is part of old Whiskey Leaks' agenda. They think that they can do it without us, right? And that's always like, hey, remember, when the war is on, oh, come on, well, let's send your black bodies forward, let's deploy. You know, I deployed 5 times, and can you imagine my disgust when I came back and seeing officers, 6 leave who never deployed, and talking stupid to me, talking rough to me. And unfortunately for them, I had enough rank that I wasn't going to deal with it.
Yeah.
All right, I gave him that right back in spades because I was there. There was nothing they could do to me at that point. You know, I was like, I went out here 5 times, man, for this country, and y'all been sitting back here at the honeycomb hideout. There are some people who really treated, you know, the Army like club, man, had a wonderful time. Didn't deploy, went out all TDY, man, made all kind of money, made $100,000. That was never my thing. It was always.
That was never your option.
Yeah, it was always the hardcore path for us.
I have said this before, and I'm going to say it right here publicly again. For the Remove the Regime rally, I got to D.C. that Friday, the 20th. And my flight was a little late, but I went down to Union Station, and you folks were already posted up. And you were standing there, and I popped a question to you. I said, why are there no Vietnam veterans represented on that stage? And you looked at me and said, oh, we'll fix that right now. So you graciously split your time with me on that stage so that I might represent the Vietnam veterans who weren't there, the Vietnam veterans who were on that wall down the street, and the Vietnam veterans who are Arlington National Cemetery. I will always be in your debt for that.
I got much respect for you, right? I've been mutuals with you for a while. I was really surprised when you hit them with the you know, you came with Bob Moore style of a speech. So I really was tickled by that because you basically kicked the door in and I rolled the hand grenade in behind you. Yeah. And it was great. It was great to see your fire. It was great to you hit him with the facts. Because, you know, Vietnam was particularly cruel to U.S. soldiers because you didn't have a choice. You was forced to do it. And the military learned a lesson, too, that this thing is hard enough with volunteers. It really becomes impossible to win anything when you force people to do it against their will.
Amen.
And so they learned that lesson. But Vietnam was really, even from people, they couldn't separate the war from the soldiers themselves.
Amen.
And the hell they went through, like, you know, they would call, you know, baby killers and all that type of stuff. I even heard even in ROTC when I was going through the JROTC, you still have people who was on that nonsense.
Yeah.
And I was like, They could not separate that profession and the individual from, you know, what's happening with the military-industrial complex and the political forces behind it.
I got a question for you, brother. And I've noticed this because that uniform that you mentioned, and you have it bedecked with every ribbon that you have so rightfully earned.
Yeah.
That triggers a whole bunch of people.
It does.
And most of all, it seems to trigger people like Keg's Breath and King Cankles, because from what I understand and what I believe is that they are not only jealous of people who have courage, but they dislike them. They dishonor them at every turn. Talk about the things that you've had to kind of put up with because of what you've earned.
Yeah. So if you go to any of my comment sections, especially on Facebook, you see them out, they got memes of me. I'm Stolen Valor, right? The medals are chocolate, right? They talk all that trash, but they could not do it. And that's why I throw it in their faces. And of course, because traditionally, you never wear your uniform, right? You only wear it for special occasions.
Roger that.
But that stuff went out the window. Nobody trying to hear that stuff, man. Right? The moment they let that demon back in there, I was like, man, it's out the window. That's why I put it on. And furthermore, they can't do nothing to me because of that D214. It's clothing. I can wear how I want to. That's why I had an Afghan tailor let it out for me. Because like I told you, I bought it brand new. It had plenty of material in it. So These extra pounds fit quite nicely in it. And so they let it out. They let it out. And I put that bad boy on. And I had ordered those medals, man. I ordered them, had them sent to me. Because I did it before. I had it when I had I have a big display case in my living room. And them bad boys ain't cheap. Man, them things are like $600 for those medals.
No, they're not, you know? They're not cheap at all.
Yeah. And so that's why when they come, the one thing about the military uniform, it's your resume. Anybody who knows, they know. They see the foreign award there. They see the combat patches. They see the multiple medals that I got, 16 full-size medals. Right, five unique deployments. And that's why they get in their feelings and try to troubleshoot this and talk all this, but they can't match what I've done. That's the problem. And they
why
get
do
upset.
You think I blurt out because this stuff hits me and I can't roll. Why do you think that Keg's Breath removed the plaque in the Netherlands honoring the black soldiers?
Because he's a Confederate demon. Right? The same reason why they went out and removed everything else. Why they're making it harder for black soldiers to stay in the military. Why they rebuilt naming bases back after the Confederacy. Right? People who lost. Racism is a currency in this country. And out of everything that Trump messes up, one thing he understands crystal clear is that's his currency. So when he says Haitians are eating the dogs, eating the cats, that's his currency. When he tells us that we couldn't make it. Remember, they told us all this nonsense too. But they didn't want us to fight their battles. That we didn't have good night vision and all of this. But turns out when it was getting crushed by them Nazis, they prayed for those black soldiers to be there and knocking them fighters off the sky for them. And it's been like that every time. We've been there. We've led the way. We've shed our blood for this country. And you come back home and demons are here to greet you, you know, lynch you in your uniform. This is why I match energy. And a lot of people are not used to me. And I mean what I say. If I walk the streets of Bosnia, if I walk the streets of Kosovo and Iraq and Afghanistan, you think I'm a fear demons here at home? They have no idea what's out there in that world out there. They sit here when they home. You know, less than 1% of people ever put this uniform on, but they swear they love soldiers. They swear it's duty out of country, unless you black. Then they want to see your D214. They want to question your military service.
That is the one thing that I have said, and I'm going to repeat it again, that people who hold that DD214 are a part of an elite force. Okay? Understand that, because these are the people who not only said that they could, they did. And that DD214, as overlorded, that is your record of proficiency, your record of honor. When you get that honorable discharge, that's something to be proud of. Yet and still, there's a segment of this population that will belittle your contributions and say it meant nothing.
Yeah, they have no idea what it took. I tell you what, I can go on any military base in the world, and they still address me as Master Sergeant coming through there, because that's the respect that you get for being those who know, know. That's why I tell people, that stuff in the history books. All those deployments I named, they're now, just like yours deployment, they're in the history books now. There is no more getting that. You had to be there. It's part of black history now. It's part of black military history. And so I don't worry about what these demons think about. One thing about ranking up to Master Sergeant, you learn quickly that I don't give a damn what somebody think. All right? I just don't.
Yep.
Because respect it's a two-way street and it has to be earned.
Absolutely.
I was like, why would I worry about what roaches and crickets say out there who could not walk the path that I walked? Less than 1% serve. Of that, about only 12% make it to full retirement. Okay, they used to send people to life in the army as a punishment. I did it willingly. I raised my hand willingly. Multiple times I raised my hand, knowing as I moved up in rank, I see more and more of the corruption. And I still stayed the path because I knew that there was no reason why I was going to give up all this money and time I would spend out here. I had to get to retirement. Deployed while I was hurt.
You know? I took notice of recently because Flair had a tent that was at Union Station that had permission to be there until the 10th of January. And it seems as though Mr. Cruz, like I'm Cancun Cruz.
I call him Flair Cruz. Yeah.
he took umbrage to you being there and had you guys removed at, 5 in the morning?
Yeah, so this was the second time they have done it. Remember, he already had posted because he wanted to make Columbus, that colonizer, circle great again. And so he had put that out there that he wanted to clean that area up. Talking about us specifically. And so they target Flair first, took their stuff, knocked it down in the middle of the night, came through. And, they went through the legal process and got it back. But we knew we was always going to be on borrowed time with this. Because we were starting to make a difference, right? People, you look at people in Congress, they were starting to say, remember your oath, right? Remember your oath to these soldiers. Think how crazy it is that something that's honorable is saying, remember your oath, is now considered a political, slight against the administration.
I know.
Every soldier should remember your oath, period. Everyone worth your salt should be telling people to remember your oath. It's to the Constitution. But then they came through and then not only did they clear everything out, they put up construction around the entire circle. So you can't even walk anywhere in the circle now. You have to take a long way around. You only have that traffic. So you add about, 5-10 minutes to your journey now, even heading to, Capitol Hill or anything coming out of Union Station, just to keep us out of there. But, it went a long time. We did not know how long we would last. We knew if things went badly, they would probably arrest us in a few hours with this protest. But to make it 108 days.
You did well.
Yeah, I think we
did quite well.
I think we did a little something there.
So what's next for U.S. Army Overlord?
Much what I'm doing right now, talking with you, continuing. I am one who's going to stay active, so I'm continuing to build self-defense teams. I'm working with people in the local area. I really believe that every black man, woman, and child that can hold an AR-15 should be armed in this country. Because this country has a dark history of repeating itself. And what I don't want to see, I don't want to see incidents like, the massacres they've done before, such as Black Wall Street, Rosewood, the Red Summer, because they want to seem to go back. They're nostalgic about going back in time. And so these are things that we need to stand firm and be willing to repel these attacks that come for us.
Well, brother, from the bottom of my heart, I thank you. I'm in your debt, as I said before. And should you ever have a need, just pop a flare. I got you covered.
I appreciate you. I think that we, as black men, we have a unique experience, especially as black veterans. And so I'm always going to be ready to, link up, do whatever I can. That's why for me, it was a no-brainer. You wanted some time, I gave you mine. Because that's what we do for each other. Because unlike the rest of these people, we really are going to be a brotherhood.
Roger that.
Brother's keeper. Because we know what it takes to walk this walk.
Roger that. Ladies and gentlemen, U.S. Army Overlord. Oh, I'm telling you. I can't even say it any better than that. Thank you, sir.
Yeah. And remember, whether it takes 10 months or 10 years, we must be absolutely relentless in our fight against white supremacy.
Amen. I couldn't have said that any better either.